Is there any chance of deploying the main antenna? Somebody suggested you might be able to shake it loose.
We've tried everything we know to. We have driven the motor until it's stalled. We have shaken the spacecraft. There was an outside chance when we fired the main engine to go into orbit that it. And so we tried one more time last week, but it's stuck. We think it's cold welded shut, probably due to the fact that in order to take it to Florida, we truck it across the country from California. It went to Florida in late 1985. It had to come back to Pasadena in 86 when the Challenger blew up, and it was trucked back to Florida a third time. And we think just bouncing its way across the country, those three ribs, which were on the underside of the spacecraft in, as it was carried across the country, just got cold welded. And we can't get it open.
And thank you very much for your talk. Wonderful. The magnetosphere towards Jupiter, it's been explained as being very hostile, especially to humans, but what about to the machinery and the probes that we send out there?
Very. The magnetic field of Jupiter is immense to begin with. It's bigger than the Sun. In fact, it's on the order of 3 to 5 kilometers across. It's so big that if you could see it in the sky, it would be bigger than the Sun. That's how big it is. Now, in that magnetosphere is the Moon Isle, which sheds about 2 tons of material a second trapped in the magnetic field. And the intensity of radiation there is 1,000 times what it is in our radiation environment, which is already a pretty serious problem to spacecraft and so on. So it the Galileo spacecraft, even staying out where it is, away from Io, will probably be damaged from radiation effects in a couple of years. And if we were going into Io, it would last less than a year.
Taken the full brunt of the radiation.
It took one big dose as we went into orbit because we went inside of Io, so we were near the probe, and it took a very big dose, but nothing happened. I mean, we were confident we had enough reserve to be able to take that dose, but we can't repeat that very many times.
So I read that in relation to Io and the sulfur
coming off the off that moon, that some of the particles had been heated up to about 30 million degrees centigrade. Is that correct?
Yes. The Io creates a donut-shaped region around Jupiter, which is very, very hot. And it's very tenuous, so that's not a hazard itself because it's very tenuous, very thin. But the temperature is very high, and it glows in the ultraviolet, and it's very visible in the ultraviolet.
And just lastly, not quite on Galileo and Jupiter, but the Voyager probes, are any of those still sending back data?
Both
if they're not, can they be woken up again and just to see what's happening?
We listen to both Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 every day. In fact, I was just down at Tidbinbilla and saw that they were listening to Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 the last few days because we're headed to interstellar space. Voyager 1 is now 60 times as far from the sun as the Earth. And we have enough power on the spacecraft to keep going another 20 years, at which point Voyager 1 will be 130 times as far from the sun as the Earth is and might well be outside of the sun's influence and in interstellar space. So we listen every day.
How long does it take to the mission?
Right now it's about 8 hours one way.
Doctor, you alluded to possibly another mission to actually land on one of the moons. Is that actually planned, and if so, when?
There's no specific plan. We are beginning to bring together oceanographers and people like that to help us begin to think about it. Clearly, no plan like that will be made until after we get the data from Galileo later this year. But I would hope that if we find that it is an exciting place to go, we will begin to seriously think about how to do it. We clearly have to do it at low cost. Because that's the direction our program is moving, is one where the missions cost considerably less, each mission considerably less than, say, Galileo costs or Cassini costs.
Dr. Stone, the probes, the parachutes that are attached to the probes, what are they made of to withstand the temperature?
I think it was Kevlar, but I don't remember, but I think it was Kevlar. So I think it was a plastic, very good plastic material, very lightweight, of course, very strong.
How confident are you that using the slingshot effect, you can send a probe from Earth to...
Could you hold the mic steady, please? I couldn't hear you.
Excuse me. How confident are you that you can send a human probe in space in an exact position using the slingshot effect? Like, do you have to make corrections of the position, or like, do you observe the position and then make corrections along the way?
Yeah, we do. We do what are called mid-course corrections to tune things up so that we're as precise as possible. Because we don't know precisely, of course, where within some specification, we don't know precisely where the planets are. And so we need to correct for all of that, and we do some mid-course corrections, small corrections. Yes.
Doctor, I heard the other day a term, metallic hydrogen.
Yes.
Can you explain that, please?
Well, the interior of Jupiter, the pressure gets high enough, probably about a million times that here on Earth. And it's believed, although it's never yet been demonstrated because the laboratory pressures were maybe several million times, laboratory pressures haven't quite gotten high enough. But theoretically, what should happen is that that the hydrogen is pressed so tightly together that it becomes an electrical conductor. It doesn't mean it's a solid. Metal does not mean solid. Metal means electrical conductor. Mercury is a metal because it conducts electricity even though it's a liquid. So this is liquid hydrogen which conducts electricity. That's a theoretical calculation that suggests this should happen. There's also other data which suggests something like that must happen because Jupiter has an immense magnetic field which must be generated by an electrical current. So down there, there has to be something, and that's mainly hydrogen, which is conducting electricity.
Excuse me, where is the energy for Io to turn itself inside out?
The energy comes from Jupiter, and the story goes like this. If you think of our moon, one face of our moon always faces Earth, and there's a permanent deformation of our moon. Just as there are tides in our ocean, because the Earth rotates under the moon, if the moon were to rotate, there would be tides in the surface of our moon. In fact, that's the reason our moon doesn't rotate anymore. In the case of Io, it's not in a perfectly circular orbit, so there's no way that it can always keep that bulge facing Jupiter. And there is a flexing of Io's crust by some 20 meters up and down every orbit it orbits Jupiter. And if you take a piece of metal and bend it, I think you know what happens. It gets quite warm. And that's what's keeping Io liquid inside. It's actually melted inside.
Professor Stone, has any of the information that's been gleaned from this particular study given any further light on our own planet?
You mean from the probe data itself?
That's right.
I don't think, I don't know that the probe at this point has given us anything specific about Earth. I'd have to think about it, but I don't think so. I think at this point it's more telling us that we don't understand how, perhaps we don't understand how the giant planets form. Perhaps we don't understand the details of the material in the disk out of which the planets form, in which case it would be telling us something about whether we really do know what the conditions were in the region where the Earth formed. So there may be some ultimate impact on our understanding how Earth itself was formed at the time Jupiter was formed.
Doctor, you said that Jupiter acts like a giant vacuum cleaner.
Yes.
Does our entire solar system act like a vacuum cleaner, sucking things in from outside, or are things like Shoemaker-Levy things that were already inside our solar system, or are they things that have come from
outside? No, most of these things are from inside of our own solar system, and it turns out that Jupiter does two kinds of things. One is that if things are close, it can act as a vacuum cleaner, but it can also, if things don't quite hit Jupiter, it can actually then scatter them out away. So it can either collect them or disperse them. It'll do one of the two. And we believe that things, comets basically, were formed much nearer the sun, say where the outer planets are, but in the process they either ended up inside of the planets or dispersed into a large cloud of comets very far outside of the orbit of Pluto. And so that's what these giant planets do. And it turns out there are calculations now that suggest that if it were not for Jupiter, which has either eaten the planets or scattered them out, the Earth would have been a very inhospitable place for life, because rather than having a collision every 67 million years, which led to the demise of the dinosaurs, there would be so many collisions that life would have very great difficulty ever evolving to anything very much more than primitive. So there are arguments that it's thanks to Jupiter that we're here today.
Dr. Stone, how much longer will the Galileo mission last?
The Galileo mission will last, we think, at least another 2 years. We hope to keep tracking it until the radiation environment finally damages the electronics. We can't predict exactly how long that will be, but 3 or 4 years, we don't know. We just don't know because it's a damage effect which slowly but surely interferes with the electronics.
Dr. Stone, how did NASA go about calculating the orbits when it became clear that you had to do it with so much less energy?
The idea of using slingshot effect is not a the idea of the slingshot effect is not new. That's what Voyager used in order to get out to Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Use the slingshot effect. So it was more a matter that was there a way to use that effect to go out to Jupiter by going into Venus, and that took some time finding when the right configuration, because the planets have to be exactly right so you can go into Venus, come back to Earth, and come back to Earth twice. That doesn't happen just by accident. It happens by running computer programs and finding the exact time where a spacecraft can do that. So it took, I think as I recall, it took 6 to 9 months to sort through the various possibilities and find there was indeed a way to do it.
We still have time for a couple more questions, if there are any more.
Dr. Stone, you were surprised at the lack of water on Jupiter. Were you equally surprised of the amount of water in the moons around it?
No, that was not a surprise. That we knew from 1979. In fact, we actually had some suggestions of that from ground-based data. There was water ice on the surface. And that's consistent with our idea that out there in the solar system where it was much colder, not only was rocky material solid, but so was the water. And the point is there's a lot of water there should have been a lot of water in the nebula out of the disk out of which things formed. There should have been. And in fact, the moons have it. The question is, why doesn't Jupiter have it?
Stone, I wonder if you could give us some information on the rocket motor.
The rocket motor?
On board Galileo.
Oh, that it turns out that the main engine, which is about this large in diameter, was built by Germany. And so this was part of their contribution to the mission. They built the main propulsion system, which slowed the spacecraft down. It was about a 400 Newton thrust, as I recall.
Dr. Stone, Galileo itself has a relatively small tape recorder in today's technical environment, and the memory isn't all that huge. How does Cassini stack up with this?
On Cassini, we have no mechanical tape recorder. We have solid-state memory only. And that's, of course, the way all things will be done in the future. No more moving tapes and things like that to have to worry about, solid-state memories, and they just get bigger and bigger all the time, as all of you know who have home computers.
Any more questions?
There's
another one down the back there, too.
Dr. Stone, is there going to be any imaging done of Jupiter itself during the mission?
Yes, we will be taking images of Jupiter, and because the number of images we can return now is quite limited, they will be targeted on understanding some of the more interesting dynamical features. All these spots turn out to be hurricane-like storm systems, so that they will pick certain objectives and focus on those to try to get the maximum knowledge out of the limited number of images. With Voyager, we had the luxury of just taking time-lapse movies, image after image, hour after hour. With the reduced bit data rate we have now, we have to very carefully target every image we have so that we can do the best we can.
Dr. Stone, with that, just over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, okay.
The probe itself entered an area of a dark spot, as you said, which was an upwelling of gases.
Actually, a downwelling.
Was it? Oh, okay. What would be the implications of that? Would there be a difference in the gases that you would expect to find in that area of the cloud compared to the lighter areas of
We cloud? Do not believe that the composition should be any different once we get down down 100 kilometers or so. And the turbulence which we saw tells us that the atmosphere is well mixed. Again, think of a pan of water boiling it. I mean, it's all mixed, very well mixed. So there's no suggestion there's a layering where, you know, the heavier things are just, you know, somehow held down by gravity. I mean, it's just well mixed, we believe. That's part of the problem we have. We don't understand why the water's not there.
Well, thank you all for your questions. Once again, thank you, Dr. Stone, and particularly thanks for pointing out Australia's involvement in all of this.